Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. It's Paul and the crew. We are looking forward to the West Ham game. The team who stole our jersey colours. Let's get some revenge. Let's climb up the ladder. This is all about us. This is the Aussie Villains podcast. Let's do it. It's not hammer time, people, at all. Oh, we'll also answer your questions. You can get us on Aussie Villains on Twitter. You can also, X. And you can also get us at Australian Fans of Villa and also a group that we have on Facebook as well. Please join. This is the Aussie Villains podcast. Villains podcast. Unbelievably, the international break has helped us. We have no injuries. We're going to a full house. How are we, boys?
Doing good, mate.
Good. How are you, Pi?
Good, mate. Good.
So we got Tess.
Woo-hoo. Hello, boys. I jumped in a little bit late. I just caught a fish and I had to let it go quickly and then jump in the car and then jump on.
We love it. We got Rhino.
Hey, everyone. How you doing?
And we've got Spudalicious.
Hello, everybody. It's match day. Woohoo.
It is. It is. Guys, the international break. I've got to be honest. I couldn't give a hoot what happened with any country in the international break as long as there was no Villains injured. I'm not sure how you guys all felt.
I was very happy. Wales got a big win against Croatia and put us back in the mix for qualification. So I loved it myself. But it's a long break though between Villa games.
And Spud and Tess?
I don't mind the internationals, but watching Ireland is a bit of a death sentence at the moment, to be honest. But I was happy for John McGinn though.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely happy for Super John McGinn. Really happy with England. England did a good job against Italy. I didn't watch it all. I kind of watched like the second half, but yeah, pretty good performance.
Boys, absolutely. The Aussies got beaten by England in a warm-up, of course. And is it actually a friendly? That my dad hates the term friendly in any sport.
It didn't feel friendly when Ollie Watkins is banging goals.
Absolutely. So, guys, let's just get into it. We play West Ham tonight. Are we worried about formations? What are we worried about tonight? What's giving you, before we get into the positives, guys, tell me what you're worried about tonight.
I fancy us against anyone at Villa Park, but I do think we match up very badly against West Ham tactically. They're exactly the kind of team we struggle against. Just strong in set pieces, a big, strong team. They're going to sit back in a low block. I'm worried about their set pieces. James Ward-Prowse swinging in set pieces. You've Souček. They have big men in there. Michael Antonio is going to give Pau Torres an awful time, I think. I am worried about the physicality and their set pieces. I think if we can match them for that or find a way around it, then I think the game's ours to be won. But I think Antonio will be targeting Pau Torres, would be my opinion on that, I would imagine.
I agree with Spud. I think we haven't got a good record against West Ham. We haven't won in the last 10 games against them, which I was quite surprised reading that earlier. So we've lost 6 and drawn the last 4. So we haven't done well against them recently. But I'm with Spud. I think Koufal and Bowen will be the danger men for me, and they'll probably look to exploit Luca Dean at left back. And they've been in a bit of form, those two, of late. So yeah, a little bit worried about their. They set up very similar in formation, but just some of their players, just the pace and the physicality, like Spud said, I think they could cause us some trouble.
Yeah, I think it's one of those games where the physicality could be a bit of an issue, as Spud was saying and Rhino was saying. So good to be on with Spud as well at this time. I haven't spoken to him on there, Arno, for ages.
Well, it's been ages testing together, mate.
But I do think they're a physical team. I think Emery will be aware of that, and he'll just try to make sure the lads are implemented in our game. Jared Bowen concerns me because he's on red hot form at the moment, if there's anyone to concern me. And Mikel Antonio, yeah, he has his physical side to him, but I don't know if he's really had the great form of late. I haven't actually really watched West Ham, to be honest with you, but there will be a bit of rough and tumble, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. What am I worried about? I'm just worried about getting off to a slow start, which has been something we've been a little bit notorious for. So I just don't want us to get off to a slow start.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the international break will sort of affect us in that point of view, like starting slow, fellas, or because we haven't played for a couple of weeks?
Same for them, though.
Mm, true, true.
Yeah, so I think it's a level playing field with that regards. But we probably have a bit more travel in us with Martinez going to Argentina, Bailey going to Jamaica. You know, we probably have clocked up a few more miles than them, I would imagine. Yeah. That's probably the only thing. But yeah, I don't think that's an effect. If it's going to affect them, it's going to affect both teams, I think. You know, or it's not going to affect them at all, would be my opinion on that.
Yeah, I reckon it's going to go down to really the preparation in between for those who didn't go away on international duty. I don't know how Dougie Louise is not going on international duty.
I'll keep him away from there. That Brazilian team, they're all getting injured. Stays away from there, the better.
I know. I just feel bad for him, you know, like, because he's been a top player this season, and I reckon he could walk into a lot of teams at the moment who are regarded as, let's say, the top four teams in the country. I think he can be in there. For sure. So, yeah.
The problem with that test, though, I always find, and this thing could be true for all our players, once you start playing international, man, it's almost a shop window. You know, he's kind of going under the radar at the minute. As soon as he starts playing regularly for Brazil, like, people are going to start taking more notice of him, you know?
Yeah, agree.
Okay, well, let's reverse it, and we'll do a preview a bit later on, a little bit in more detail. What is something you... Well, where is something you're excited about that we can do against West Ham tonight?
I think our pace can hurt them, the Abbey and Watkins, because they're not the most mobile at the back with Craig Dawson. Good defender, don't get me wrong, and does the job. And one thing about David Moyes' teams is that they all know what they have to do. They're well drilled in their thing. But I think the Abbey and Watkins' pace can hurt, like, Dawson. Like, he's a bit slow. It's physical, but... Ollie Watkins is pretty good at mixing it up with physical defenders, I think. You know, he's not afraid to get in amongst it. The Abbey's pace will hurt them. So, yeah, I would say the Abbey and Watkins would be very important in this game. Like,
I think, for me, home form, obviously, we've been really strong at home. And you touched on it, Paul. If we start strong, and we got the crowd on with us, then, yeah, I think, you know, we're more than a match for anyone at home. I think it's going to be a big battle for Kamara and Luiz in there. I think if they get on top in the middle, I think that goes a long way for us winning the game.
Oh, the game will be decided in the middle, 100%, yeah.
Yeah.
Like they've replaced Declan Rice really well with Edson Alvarez and James Ward-Prowse. The two of them have just settled in fantastic. It's going to be a really good battle, actually, between the four of them, Luiz, Kamara, Edson Alvarez and James Ward-Prowse.
Yeah, 100%. And we know James Ward-Prowse, already touched on him with his free kicks, and he seems to do it against Villa fairly regularly as well. So hopefully we're fairly disciplined. So, yeah.
I reckon he's got a picture of the Villa team on a wall, maybe in his bathroom. And I actually reckon he practices masturbating to it.
I think we need to go into this game and try and frustrate them by keeping possession.
Can I stop you for 1 second, Tess?
Yeah.
I love the fact that I've just done a masturbation bad joke and you have just jumped into beautiful football punditry. Go for it, big man.
Sorry. I apologize
to any kids listening.
I did have a giggle at it. But while you guys were talking, I was just like, you know, we know that they're physical and stuff, but I think we need to frustrate them by keeping possession of the ball a lot, if we can. Get them running around trying to chase the ball a lot, and I think that's when we'll start getting those openings. Who do they have at their? Who's their left back?
Their left back
is it Emerson?
It's Emerson from Chelsea.
I think he's a little bit like, I don't think he's like the best defender, and if someone like Diaby and stuff can get at him quite regularly, I think that might be a go-to.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think I was going to say that in a minute, Tess. I think Emery's going to target him. Because he's good going forward, but he's almost like our fullback Dean, like where he's good going forward. He offers something so much to them in attack, but he can be questionable at defending at times. Do you think they'll target Luca Dean so today, lads? I think they'll.
Yeah, I said at the start, I think Bowen and Koufal, that's their outlet at the moment. Like, Koufal's got 4 or 5 assists in his last 4 or 5 games. And Bowen, like Tessa said, is red hot at the moment. So I think they will go at him. And that is a concern. But I think, you know, it's not uncommon for teams to go at Luka Dean because of, you know, his attacking intent and his, you know, his pace.
But that's where I think Cafel can be caught out. So I know that everyone's going to plan that we're going to target Emerson, and we'll do a preview again in a moment. But I think we can actually target their ability to be caught out with lack of pace. I don't think we start steady. I think we just got to go at them from the start and put them on the back foot. If we if we give them a little bit of impetus at the start, we could be in trouble.
Mm. Yeah, I will say one thing about Cufal though. He's actually a very good one-on-one defender. He does get caught out, but he's actually very good at one-on-one situations. So, yeah, he's definitely got blips in his game. You're dead right, Paul. But Emerson, I would say, I would imagine the side would be attacking though.
Yeah, and I just think I suppose I'm just probably overthinking it. Where I'm going, well, they're going to know that that's what we're going to do. And then have Ward-Prowse kind of fall back to cover with him. And I just think that, you know, taking on Cafal and making him accountable could actually stop his attacking impetus as well. There's just a thought in that regard.
I think their set pieces are a big concern for me though. Not just James Ward-Prowse, but like they're big men. They're like, we do give up chances from set pieces. They're not all big, but you can't against them. That's their bread and butter.
Yeah, we're not the best defending set pieces though, are we? We've sort of, you know, we've discussed this a fair bit, and yeah, it is a bit of a weakness for us. And I think, you know, without Mings being in there, I definitely think we felt that presence of not having someone in who can deal with the ball coming in. And yeah, you're right. I think this will be a big test for us.
Well, we're not the best at taking advantage of our own set pieces as well. But I'll tell you what, they've got a keeper named after a nipple. We've got to be able to take them on.
Oh, my goodness.
Apologies, exactly. Listeners. This is usually a family friendly podcast, but
we got nipples and masturbation today.
Hey, that's every day for me, people. Okay, why don't we bring it back to the people who listen to this podcast? And we put questions up on Facebook and Twitter every week. Who wants to handle the Facebook question, guys? Did we get any there?
I can jump in if you give me 5 seconds. Let me just carry on, Paul. I'll log in and have a quick look.
This is spectacularly organised. I take it's all my fault, guys. Let's hope our defence is more organised than my podcast skills.
I haven't watched a pre-match, but is Anyodo available?
Yes.
Yes, he is. He is available.
Okay. Yeah. Any concerns about Zaniolo and the alleged...
I think we have a question around that anyway, Tess.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
That'd be good. I was reading about it and I was like, oh my God, like this is something I didn't even realise was happening. It just came out of the blue. Like,
did you see Tonelli's agent came out and said that he's got a gambling addiction?
No. So I had, like, I read something the other week, but briefly, but I didn't actually see like who'd come out and said what and if it's actually true or
it looks like Tonelli's in big trouble because they reckon that they have the proof now that he was actually betting on AC Milan games that he was playing in.
Yep, that is
okay. All right, I'm in, fellas. I'm into the Facebook group there.
Well, let's go. You run this section, buddy.
All right, I'll go for it then. So first question's from Peter Steinfort. Touchy subject, but if you were Villa, what would you do with Zaniolo? I love him. I reckon he has it and is close to unleashing. Nico seems to be sticking with just poker and blackjack, line, unlike the other two. Okay. So I haven't read too much about the story, but obviously I understand the gist of it. But yeah, what do you think, fellas? What do you think Villa should do with Zaniolo?
We should take a punt on him. No. You guys go first because I actually do have something to say about this. So I'll let you three go first.
Villa released a statement yesterday. It was a well-written statement, to be fair to them. And they basically said, look, we're not going to say too much on it, but Nicola Zaniolo is available. He has been more than helpful with the investigation in Italy. And he has our full support until proven otherwise. Basically, to paraphrase it, that's basically what they said. And I think that's a fair enough stance from the club because he hasn't been found guilty of anything. Like, so the club have to stand up to him some kind of level, you know?
100%. I was just about to say, like, you know, that's what the club should be doing is standing by him because, you know, until all the facts come out and he's actually charged with something, then we've just got to get on with it, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, like if they stop players from every time their name got in the paper for anything, I know it's a bit more serious, but like there has to be some kind of policy where, like in criminal law, you know, innocent proven guilty, it's fair enough. Unless the player himself gets asked to take out of the fire line, I don't see a problem with it, to be honest.
I think it goes down to all this situation, in my opinion, just with the gambling situation in football in general. You know, these are, it's not just limited to supporters who are every day being bombarded with gambling information, all this kind of stuff. It probably affects all the players as well. Concern would be if you're sort of betting on yourself and your own team. That's a really big concern as a professional footballer. And I mean, if you're, for me, professional footballers, if you're doing that as a pro, then you really deserve like a real ban. I think Ivan Toney was one of those who were doing something similar, wasn't it? Or gambling on something to do with football, and heavy punishment for him. So I think the club are right to stand by Zaniolo at the moment. You have to stand by all your players and look after them. But if something does come out to say, well, you know, he's going to potentially be banned and stuff, and then I think, I don't know what happens there contract-wise in terms of the loan deal and all these sorts of things.
Guys, this, you know, for me, I might take it away from the actual player and his actions and so forth and just talk about the, what, you know, some of the root causes, if that's okay, getting a little bit deep after other jokes tonight.
So we're going deep.
Yeah,
right. Nipples and masturbation.
Yeah, absolutely. a day in the life of Paul. guys, I think that sport in general, whether it's football or any other professional code, they do have education programs for people, right? But one, and especially for young people. But one of the things that's never really done is people aren't aware that these kids are going into academies at 14, 15, becoming professionals, some of them at 16, 17. They're given so much free time in the day. So in a typical day, they might come in for a couple of hours of conditioning in the morning. They have a few hours off in the middle of the day. They are back to sometimes afternoon training and skills sessions. And then, you know, they might have a team, you know, video sessions, and then they've got time to themselves. They're in airports, they're in hotel rooms by themselves, quite often away from their families from a very young age. Unfortunately, unless we are really helping these people either get some education, and I'm not talking about gambling education, I'm talking about getting degrees if things don't work out, or doing a lot more in that downtime period, we're going to see more and more and more players. Because if you've never had any addiction, it is very easy to say, Zaniola and so forth should know better, but an addiction is an addiction, and knowing what is right and being able to control that are two completely different things. And now, if Zaniola was gambling on his own games, then that's absolutely no matter what your addiction is, that's you know, you basically have the potential to manipulate results, and you should get the full force of anything going on. But I think if we actually knew the amount of addictions going on in terms of, you know, what they call lower class drugs or gambling, then it would be far wider than anyone would know. And I think the league and so forth, I think Villa has a gambling sponsor on our shirt, do we not?
Yeah, we do.
Yep.
So hypocrites of the highest order that take, I'm not talking about Villa, I'm talking about the whole sporting profession in the world. We're quick to denounce someone for gambling on their game and manipulating results. But is it actually about manipulating the game, or is it about the financial pressures that come with it? I just think everyone needs to be very careful judging players and so forth without knowing fully how they are not supported from a very young age. That's just my rant. I think I just think a lot more young people would be addicted than we're aware of.
This is something I've taken a lot of interest, Paul, in the last couple of years, because you're dead right what you're saying, and I've actually done a lot of reading on it and watched a lot of stuff on it. So like two things that come to mind straight away. So if you haven't watched Paul Merson's BBC documentary, find it, watch it.
You have to.
Absolutely incredible. Yep. The depths he goes into and talks about it. So honest, so open. Or listen to his audiobook. Again, just unbelievable. He reckons he's gambled like 7 million in his life. Just you're crazy. He talks to the depths he gets it. So I don't advise anyone to read his book, or watch the documentary. The other thing is Keith Gillespie. Remember Keith Gillespie that used to play at my dad? Right, he had a really, really, really bad addiction. And he's talking about, like, in his book, where he does talks, he goes around to schools now in Ireland, doing talks to the young people about the dangers of gambling addiction and the problems they have in elite sport. So what he's talking about is that he was actually playing in a game for Newcastle. Remember, he was part of the Andy Cole switch. So when Man United signed Andy Cole from Newcastle, Keith Gillespie went the other way. He said he had a game. He was in a game and he had Newcastle that he was playing and he was 3-0 up. He had money on Newcastle to win 3-0. He said Barry Venison scored to make it 4-0. The whole team started celebrating. He said he was nearly ready to cry because it had cost him 20 grand or something. So it had got to the point where he just couldn't. So then recently what I listened to, and I advise any of you, I don't know if any of you listened to the podcast, The Diary of a CEO. So it's your man, Stephen Bartlett. He's from The Dragon's Den. So he's one of the investors in Dragon's Den. So a really good podcast. So he had Ivan Tony on his podcast recently talking about his issues, what happened. So Ivan Tony admitted that a lot of games he was betting on himself to be first goal scorer in the game. So, yeah, and then he said that kind of got out of control. But he said his own
issues... That kind of got out of control. That's manipulating results, really.
Yeah.
So he said that he was backing himself to be first goal scorer. They're the only bets he had in any game that he was involved in. So then he was talking about how there was other examples in the lower leagues of similar charges, similar amount of charges and stuff. And he said because he was a Premier League player that they made an example of him, which he says isn't really fair because there was precedent there of bans and stuff. But he made a very good point. And this is why I don't like to hammer people, because we don't know what's going on for Tonelli. We don't know what's going on for Zaniolo. But for Ivan Tony, what he said was there's such a big thing campaign in the Premier League and the FA and all this kind of stuff now for mental health and whatnot, and as there should be. But he made the point of they banned him from playing games. Fair enough. But then they banned him from training. So they've isolated him away from Brentford as well. So I'm suffering, I admitted my charges, but then they took me away from training. So like you can't on one hand say that you're all about the player's mental health and then completely take away everything that they know. So I get what he's saying. He said why can't he train with the team, you know? So there's a lot I don't like to hammer anyone because I don't know their personal situation.
I reckon on BBC Sport, on the page there, I reckon I've read about 3 or 4 articles in the last 12 months about ex-footballers, not well-known footballers, but guys in the lower leagues who've, you know, come out with similar problems. And, you know, you start to get a picture that it is rife in football and in sport, that these guys, like Paul says, you know, they got large, you know, a lot of money and a lot of time to themselves, and they do get sucked into it. And it's really sad. And, you know, we see some of the, you know, the players who are well known, but there's a lot in the lower leagues as well who are suffering. And like Paul says, I think it's rife, and yeah, you can't really judge people because you just don't know what they're going through and why they're doing it, I guess. But yeah, it's really sad.
Alex Ferguson said online betting was the worst thing that ever happened to professional footballers, because he said that back in the day when he had his young players coming through, he said he'd get a call from the bookies and stuff. If the players are in there or whatever. But no, he said later on in life, he couldn't control anything because they were just setting up accounts and their missus' names and whatnot, you know? So,
yeah
it's sad, man. It's sad.
Great question, though. Really great question.
Yeah, really good question. And Peter's got a follow-up question, yeah? So his next question is, with Zaniolo under a cloud and Ramsey out medium term again, who is a realistic target for Villa in the January transfer window? Do you lads have anyone in mind, or can someone step up? Very good questions from Peter Steinfort.
Sorry, Bruno, can you read that again? My apologies.
Yeah, no worries. With Zaniolo under a cloud and Ramsey out medium term again, who is a realistic target for Villa in the January window? Do you lads have anyone in mind, or can someone step up?
Take it away, boys.
Going to go for a
question.
Test?
No, you go for it, because I've got to think about this one.
It's a very good question. When we look, I'll start it off with just, you know, when you look in-house in the squad, you know, obviously he's mentioned Ramsey to come back medium term. So if Zaniolo does go, you'd hope that Ramsey obviously comes back fit and is not out for too long. But, you know, we've got Kellyman, who's been slowly introduced to the squad. I wouldn't expect him to see a lot of minutes, but with a lot of games coming up, he's possibly one out in that could step up. But, yeah, as far as realistic transfer targets go, that's a really tough one for that position.
I think realistically what would happen, though, would be more than likely, like, I'm sure Ramsey will hopefully be back before January anyway, but
yeah,
I'd imagine what would happen was that McGinn will start playing on the left side and Bailey will just see more game time on the right.
Yeah.
That's probably the most realistic thing that's going to happen. I'll tell you one thing, though, if they were to sign anyone to move McGinn over to that other side and I had a choice, and someone that I'd love to sign would be Pedro Neto from Wolves.
Mm.
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind him. I think he would fit in well with our squad as well, Pedro Neto. It's really tough, though, because so far what I'm seeing from Emery is that he likes to give those who he's trusted the opportunity, and normally he doesn't sort of tend to go for the sort of young one. I mean, if we're winning a game and like spanking people all over the place, then I'd imagine him giving minutes to someone like Kellyman. But I don't think he'd be opposed, like, if we needed somebody to play wide in you know, if we don't get Ramsey back soon, we've still got the option of Moreno, who's going to be coming back soon, hopefully. He could use Dean ahead of Moreno. Or he could even choose to try and use Watkins to play as a sort of more wide player and then get, you know, maybe Duran more minutes. I think he'd be more inclined to keep kind of players that he's currently got. If there's business to be done, the idea, I don't know who is out there and who would be available. Although, I think Sanchez may be gone soon from Man United.
I think we'll be looking outside of the Premier League. I don't even think it'll be a Premier League player. I think it'll be I do think it'll be a Spanish midfielder. They've got a lot of free agent midfielders in Spain at the moment. A lot of clubs are really short of money. So that's just my feeling. I do believe we'll bring someone else in.
I'd have to say that I don't think midfield is going to be the priority. Even if Ramsey's out injured, I think he believes he has enough in there with Tillemans, McGinn, Louise, Dendonker,
Kinnear. Yeah.
So I think it's not a major concern for me personally.
No, and I think we can change the shape as well, can't we? Go three at the back, push the wing backs a bit further forward and sort of change it up a little bit. So I agree, probably not going to be a priority, but hopefully Zaniolo does, hopefully this all works out, though, because I agree with Peter in his first question that he looks like he's just about to, get going. And as soon as he gets that first goal, he looks like he's going to be a player. So hopefully it all works out.
Belt or so.
Rattle
the net zone because he's hitting some
hopefully
bodies.
So the next one is from Mark Smith, who's our top contributor on Twitter and on Facebook for us. So his first question is set pieces, fellas. He says, for me, as good as an original as we are with our set pieces, we don't score enough goals from them. 10 corners versus Wolves and nothing to show for them. How do we improve?
I'm going to go first on this, guys. I think we need fresh blood. I think we need a new special set. I think we need a new set pieces coach because it looks really stale, and it looks like we're trying the same thing over and over again. So, where does it improve? We're not going to improve too much on in terms of signing. So, I think it might be time to talk at a new set pieces coach.
I'm going to go with keep it simple. I think we try to overcomplicate it sometimes. And I think sometimes you just got to get the ball in there, whether it's a corner or a free kick. We've got some people in there who are decent in the air, but we seem to just sort of mess around with it a little bit, get it in early, let the big boys contest for it and just see what happens.
Unfortunately, Mings is our best header of the ball and he's out for the season.
Yep.
Oh, that's a massive problem for us, even though he probably wasn't the threat in the box that he should have been. Because he's so good at defending headers. We're just really, really poor at attacking set pieces, I think. So I think he's trying other things to try and shift players out of position. But sometimes just get the ball in, as you say, get it in the mix.
The problem is when we get it in the mix, Spud, we just put it right on the keeper's head.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. Let Dougie have a shot every time.
Football.
So football is like set piece are so important now, and I do think it's something important because some of the routines we try are actually very clever. Like some of the stuff that we've tried, but it's every time. You don't need to try something every time, you know. And half the problem that they have is trying to decide who's going to take it. The half of them look disappointed they're not taking the set piece. Like Louise will line up, Dina lines up, and Bailey lines up, right? And then, like, Luca Dean has hit some lovely free kicks for us, but he doesn't get to take them anymore. So I don't. I'm not too sure. I just don't think we're a big team, and yeah, it's a concern really because set pieces are really important, you know.
Well, look at West Ham. West Ham aren't going to be messing around trying to do all these routines. Their thing is get it in the box.
Yeah.
Create havoc around the box, you know, create havoc around the keeper. And that's part of the reason why they're so good at free kicks and set pieces. Sometimes I think we try to be a bit too clever all the time and it doesn't come off. And it may come off in training, but you've got to remember you're not training against the kind of defenders that we'll be playing against tonight in terms of West Ham and stuff. They'll be doing other things and managing their box in their area, and sometimes you can't account for that.
The problem is, though, Tess, like if you were going to put like McGinn or Diaby now up against Craig Dawson swinging in a corner, they're not going to win the ball.
No.
You know, they're just not. A lot of teams are bigger than us. That's the biggest issue I think we face. Like, we're just not a big team. Like.
It was only Ola could go up there, couldn't he?
That's where you'd like to see Duran come through, guys.
Yeah. I think he can head at the ball. I think Zaniolo will be a good one to put in the box because you need to sort of have the bigger players, if you can, get in the box and create havoc. Then, you know, the other defenders have work to do. But we're not a big team at all, so it makes it quite difficult in that aspect.
Diego Carlos looks like he can attack a ball. So, like, he's quite physical. Obviously, his fitness is kind of a bit of a concern at the moment, but maybe that's a route, like, that we can...
What do you think about, as an adjunct to this, what do you think at the moment, this tactic, and I know people will say that we protect players too much, but the surrounding of the keeper and blocking the keeper from being able to get the set pieces is becoming almost ridiculous, like where two players will just not even, like, it's not that they just get in front of the keeper, but they're basically almost tagging the keeper out of these situations. I'm not sure what your thoughts are on it or how that can change, but it looks pretty awful at the moment.
Yeah. Well, they brought in that law or rule or whatever it was to try and give free kicks or disallow goals if they feel like the goalkeeper's being impeded in his vision and all these sorts of things. So
why do players do it then? Because we do it. We'll put McGinn and someone else like right on the keeper and then just keep moving to... I don't know. There's something about it I just don't like.
I don't really like it. I just don't know how you stop it. I'd imagine can't just blow up every time the keeper's being surrounded because it's in play at the
but
time.
But it's not just surrounding. Like, okay, so watch tonight, and both teams will do it, and we do it a lot.
Mm.
And what will happen is they're not even looking at the ball; they're looking at the keeper.
Yeah.
And they are blocking the keepers from getting to it. So I don't know. Maybe I'm over the top with it, but it's not a good look. Anyway.
I think it's always been in the game, though, I reckon, that type of tactic. And, it's just about trying to put the keeper off, isn't it? But the keepers are quite protected, as Tess said. Like, they have sort of gone a long way to sort of making sure keepers are not getting, not getting fouled as they're going up for the ball. And so I'm not too concerned about it. I am more concerned about someone like John McGinn, though, as Spud just touched on, where he's marking usually one of the bigger fellas and he's got his hands all over him. Wolves, it was giving me... I was getting nervous because he was just pulling shirt, wrestling, and I was like, is a penalty coming here if you carry on?
I agree. I thought he was going to get red carded at one stage.
That worries me more than surrounding the keeper is how the mismatches were like, why are we putting McGinn on someone like Dawson, who's probably, you know, their biggest player? Why can't we shuffle around and put, you know, I know we're not a typically big team, but we have bigger players than McGinn that we probably could have shuffled at Dawson. You could just see that McGinn was just struggling with the physicality there.
He's so lucky he didn't give away a penalty in that game.
Oh, so lucky.
Lucky.
I mean, I'd like like Wolves sent Dawson in there, like, and McGinn just manhandled him. Like if that was the role reverse, like for a Torres or something, I would have been screaming for a penalty. Like
100%.
He was very lucky. Like he wasn't just the only thing. The only saving grace was from is that Dawson got a bit physical back with him, and I think the referee just kind of thought, well, it's a bit of going a bit both ways. But McGinn was the instigator. Like no doubt.
Yeah.
I thought he was very lucky. I agree, but I thought not only was he lucky not to give away a penalty, at one stage I thought he was lucky to still be on the pitch.
Yeah. And you're dead right, Paul, because what can they do to players? They're being put in a position where they're marking lads twice the size of them. That's like they have to try and get physical to some degree, and it's going to cost us a penalty at some point.
Yeah.
Just not tomorrow morning.
Not tomorrow morning.
All right. So we've got a second question from Smithy, which is quite an interesting one, actually. What piece of technology or equipment would you like to see used in football? For me, a simple laser measurement tool for the ref, so at a free kick, the wall is exactly 10 yards from the ball.
I actually agree with this one, but I also think that the linesman having a line that so where he is with the flag actually somehow also sends the signal to the VAR. You know how like they have to pretty much draw the line on VAR and everything?
Yeah.
So potentially if the linesman's in the right spot, they can also use his flag of where he is at the time, and it automatically draws a line from where the flag is across. Does that make sense, what I'm saying there?
Yeah. That's not
actually my answer, but I just thought they could do something along those lines, surely.
Mm.
One technology I'd like to see brought into football, and because it works so well in rugby, I don't see why we can't. Why can't the referees be mic'd up so everyone knows what's going on?
Yeah,
that's a good one. That's a very good one.
I don't see why not, because it's going to cut out a lot of these issues where they're saying, you know, mates looking after mates. Mic them up. Everyone, it's terrible. It's terrible when you're in the ground and it's stopped for a VAR decision. It's okay on TV because we know what's going on. Like when you're in the ground, like you're waiting on word, like.
And if the ref's mic'd up as well, Spud, it might clean up some of the antics of the players as well, because if they come in within, you know, earshot of the mic, then they're going to be a lot more conscious of what they say. And that's something that that's always been, you know, painful in football, is the surrounding of the referees and the carry on, and, you know, and that might clean that up a bit as well. You know, if they know there's a recording, they might behave themselves a bit.
And you can bring in retrospective action after that. It would stop
at
100%. And like they tried to bring in the rule, and it is actually technically the rule, but it's just not followed through. Technically, it's only meant to be the captains that are allowed to go and speak to the ref about these decisions, right? So, and it worked for a little while, but then the referees just lost control again. And like Bruno Fernandes, Man United are very bad for him. I don't want to just focus on them because all teams do it. We do it ourselves. United are very bad for it. Like, and as you said, if they can start dishing out cards, retrospective action after the game.
Well,
why not mic them up? There's no gray areas if they're mic'd up. There's no hiding.
Yeah, agree.
Perfect. That's okay, all the questions on Facebook.
Well, I think we should also have better technology in the actual ball itself. So the crossing the line and everything like that, it should be far better chipped in the actual ball itself, surely. Mm-hmm. With all the innovations that they use on these balls, that there should be some kind of tracker in there that really tells you conclusively that the ball's over the line or not.
Oh, what about a bit of shock therapy for players who dive like a neck, like a dog collar, the shock? So Bruno Fernandes, chuck one on him, and if he's diving, just give him a quick zap and try and stamp that out of the game.
I always thought they should have brought a sin bin in for simulation. That would eradicate that diving and hanging around the place, rolling around the place a bit if you've got sin bin for 10 minutes or whatever, you know?
Mm.
The only problem I'm a bit worried about, I don't want to get too far away from the original rules because we've gone so far away from the football that you fall in love with, that if you keep changing everything, it's just going to be a new game, isn't it?
Yeah.
It almost is, guys.
Yeah.
I think just in general, like, we can have all the technology, but, you know, I think referees need better standard of training, to be honest with you, because I've been watching games lately over the last, let's just say this season, and the referees, top level referees in the Premier League, you know, I just feel like the training isn't all there. I'm watching teams getting away with certain things, and the lower team isn't getting anything in return. So I just feel like the referees just need to be trained a lot better. It's okay to say that they go sit in a room and they're doing all this beeping, beep tests and all these sorts of things to find out where the foul is. But they've got to do more on the field stuff, for sure, you know. And that's why at the moment, you know, referees aren't doing the lines person's job anymore. The referees are referees and the linos are going as assistant referees and fourth officials are trained to be fourth officials. It needs to be better than that.
I also am a strong believer, and I, because it's starting to ruin the game, I genuinely believe that if the VAR can't make a decision in 10 seconds, then the ref's on-field decision should stand. Because if it can't make a decision in 10 seconds, then it's not clear and obvious error, is it?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, what makes it even worse, guys, is the EPL was the first competition in the world that made most of their referees professionals. So it's an even bigger indictment that we can't get it right.
Yeah, I think we're going to lose a lot of these referees anyway because they're sick of the British media. I think a lot of them are going to end up in Saudi Arabia on big payers eventually. Aren't
they? Well, they get paid pretty poorly, to be honest. Their incomes, I mean, for what they do, if we're talking about the scrutiny and everything they're under, their average income's around £40,000, which is great, but they cop a hell of a lot of scrutiny and everyone knows their names.
Yeah.
I think a good idea. If we're allowed to have sort of international and foreign players play in English football, I don't see why the Premier League can't recruit some of the top referees from other leagues around the world, you know, to come and pay them to do a refereeing job, because there are some top referees around Europe and around the world, and probably on less of an income than, say, Premier League referees are on. There's no reason as to why the Premier League can't try to make the league better by recruiting top referees.
Well, they don't pay them well enough to move your family and go to another country. And I think we spend so much money on football that we should spend a lot of money on our referees. It's an indictment that they're getting paid. What they're getting paid, yes, they get bonuses for cup matches and different things that they referee.
Mm.
But if an average professional referee's wage is that low, then they're not going to attract the best, mate. They need to pour more money into referees.
Well, yeah, more money to enable you to get the top referees like you do with the players. The players get a lot more money and they get help with moving their families and all this time, kind of stuff. And if you want the Premier League to be the best league in the world, you've got to try and get some of the best referees around. And at the moment, there isn't enough British referees in the game who are good enough. And we've got an Australian, right? We've got an Australian who's a referee as well. You've got female referees that are out there that are really good referees that could come into the game and look after a Premier League game. I've got no doubt about it. I think the Premier League need to look at that situation.
Well, it was only 2016 when the Championship referees became professional. So when they drop the referees, they go, oh, drop him down the level. Well, only a few years ago, if they were dropped down the level, they were reffing in a... I know it's a Championship, but half of the referees in there weren't even full-time. They were part-time at best.
Yeah, that's not good enough, is it?
Well, the amount of money, invest in the referees, invest in their education, make them accountable, make them have to do press conferences afterwards where they talk about their decisions.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And give Villa more penalties.
Good questions, guys, today. Well done.
Yeah. Awesome.
Have any Twitter questions, Paul?
Yeah, we'll go in there. You'd think with all the time that we just spoke, but I was really interested in your answers there, guys. So that's my
It's such a good topic, though. And, yeah, just good to actually talk about and discuss it and everyone to actually give their opinion on it. Because I think it's something sometimes when you look on X or Twitter or whatever it is, you know, you've got just people that are just angry about referees, and there's not enough discussion as to why you're angry. It's just you're angry. So it's really good to have a debate and talk about those kinds of situations, because it matters. It matters to everybody who loves football. It's not just about slagging off referees. There are some good referees, but it's about how can they be better.
Yeah, and they're under a lot of pressure. There's no mistake. Mm-hmm. But that's where the VAR should be helping them. But it's like the VAR have no excuse. The referee human error on the pitch can happen, right? But the VAR have like 25 cameras, like 25 angles. They can, you know what I mean? They should not be taking 2 minutes to make a decision. Like they should, mm-hmm. they should, like, that's, it's disgraceful.
Well, we put questions up on X a few days ago, but we actually had a lot of people look at the post, but no one put up questions for once. So I think we've covered a fair bit there anyway, time-wise, guys. But look, let's go into our... We've actually done a fair bit of our preview, so I think that it's probably a good time to almost finish off the podcast, guys. I want your scores for tomorrow morning and Spud tonight's game.
Are you going to... Do you want to do the lineup first, Spud?
Apologies, guys. Let's get into it. Start with you, Spud. We'll do the back line first, as we always do.
For me, in this game, just with the threats, I would go back five. I would play Carlos, Kanza, Torres, Cash and Dina. Just the threats that West Ham offer going forward. And help out, get Diego Carlos in there. We need a bit of physicality in there to help out Torres, I think. So I would play with a back five.
Midfield?
My midfield, Kamara, Luis. So it'd be almost like 5-2-3-1, is it?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. The midfield battle's the thing for me.
Five, two, one.
Yep.
I'm going for at the back, Spud, because I think we're going to need to push someone extra in the midfield. Because this is my opinion. I think that if we sit too far back and we lose that midfield battle, I think we could be overrun by this team. So I think we're going to have to shore up the midfield. So I've actually gone Konza, Carlos, Torres and Din.
I've gone four at the back as well. I've gone Cash, Dina, Konza and Torres. Obviously Kamara and Luis just in front of those guys then.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I'm going Din, Torres, Carlos, Konza.
Yeah, that's interesting too. Like Konza as a right back, so
he's been amazing this season for me, in my opinion. He's been fantastic. Not many people get past him, and he's not a right back, and he's been doing a really good job in terms of if we kind of play that sort of three in the back, where Cash is playing a little bit further forward, it's been working all right in that term of formation.
Yeah, it gives you that physicality as well, doesn't it? With, you get another big body like Spud's doing with his defence. If you put Konza right back and push Carlos in there, like you say, you've got a bit of physicality back in there.
Definitely number two, like if you put five at the back, then like your fullbacks can become midfielders as well. It's extra men
My thoughts, Spud, and this is why I started my midfield, where I went Cash, Kamara, Louise, McGinn. I had Cash kind of floating between midfield and supporting Konza, and that'll also support what I'm going to say about my forward line. I might as well, Diaby and Watkins up front, but Diaby floating back into the space. So I've kind of got it a floating where Cash supports Konza, Diaby kind of supports the midfield and Watkins.
Yeah, I don't see him playing a back five. I think he should, but if we're away from home, I think he would. But at home, he probably will do his tried and trusted 4-4-2, to be honest.
Yeah.
I just thought maybe if just in this game, because you're going to have Souček pushing.
I like it. I actually really like your thoughts behind it. I think that Emery won't do it, but it wouldn't shock you if he did.
With Diaby and McGinn behind Watkins, you could have McGinn to drop in and pick up Souček then to become that extra. I don't think he'll do that at home though, because I think Emery is fancies us to beat anyone at Villa Park,
And the crowd are rocking at Villa Park at the moment as well. They're noisy as hell. You watch the game and you can just hear the Villa fans singing pretty much the whole game when we're playing at home.
Yeah, do you think he'll start Bailey?
I haven't gone with him, to be honest. I've gone, obviously, McGinn, Diaby and Zaniolo and then Watkins up front. I think, with the Zaniolo stuff, I don't really know, but I just have a feeling that he might start him and just get him out there just sort of, I don't know, just better to be out there sometimes and then just keeping everything normal. But, I think he'll go.
All Bale's best performances have come off Villa Park, though.
I think Bailey would probably be the sub, in my opinion. I think probably Zaniolo will get a game. Like if Zaniolo doesn't start, I think he's protecting him. I think if Zaniolo doesn't start the game against West Ham, I think Emery's protecting him a little bit. Well, then you could probably see that Bailey's going to start there. But I would imagine he will go with Zaniolo because his form is actually really not bad. You know, like he's just warming up and getting used to the Premier League. Where was he playing before? Galatasaray in Turkey or somewhere? It's a different kind of league.
Who gets dropped for Zaniolo starting then? Because I think that's a really good point, Tess. A really good point.
Oh, I think if Zaniolo doesn't play, I would imagine it would like be 4-2-3-1 and it'd be Bailey would play on the right and McGinn would play on the left.
Yeah, I agree. Because we don't have Ramsey and we saw what Ramsey is about when he came back for that one game. Hey, like he's just unbelievable footballer.
You have to remember too, we're playing as at Alkmaar Thursday night too, so he's going to be like Tillemans, Zaniolo. They'll all probably play in that game.
Yeah. We'll keep going, guys, because I've basically given my lineup.
I think I've done mine as well. Yeah, I think I'm all done.
Yeah, I've got Kamara, Douglas Luiz, John McGinn, Diaby, Zaniolo, Watkins.
I'd love him to play a 5-3-2. I don't think he's going to, but I'd love to see Luiz, Kamara and Tillemans together in the midfield, to be honest, in this game, because West Ham are so good in the middle, but it's not going to happen. Not at home, anyway. But
Who would you have further forward if you had the like Tillemans, Kamara and Dougie? Who would you put? Which one of those three would you put as the further forward playing?
Tillemans.
Yeah.
He's more being a bit more forward.
Very hard not to have John McGinn in this game, though. You know, John McGinn, he's not big, but he's physical. He'll get amongst it, you know, in West Ham.
Yeah, I know, but he's a little bit off with it at the moment. I'm a tiny bit worried about that physicality. Hey, boys, our home form this year, we're actually, our goal difference at home is plus 11. So we've played three games at home for three wins so far in the Prem. We scored 13 goals and conceded 2. That is unbelievable home form. 3 wins for a plus 11 goal difference.
Yeah, we're really good at home. You'd fancy us against anyone at home, really. Did any of you watch the Man City Brighton game last night?
No, I haven't watched it.
Yeah, it's just a really good game, actually. But every time I watch Brighton, like that 6-1 looks even more impressive. Like they're so good. Yeah. Like they're so well coached. Like, I mean, Man City dominated the first probably 35 minutes or so. But
yeah
that 6-1, it's just an incredible result to beat Brighton 6-1. Like, you know, so
a lot of results around us, Spud, that went either way last night. And you know, we get a point out of this game, we move into fifth again. And, you know, I think it's important we don't lose this game because West Ham actually would move up to 17 points and into outright fifth. A draw keeps us in fifth and a win keeps us well and true. A win gets us 3 points clear of Newcastle in fifth.
Yeah, beating the teams in and around you is going to be super important this year, isn't it? Picking up points because it's already looking, you know, pretty tight from first to 10th, say, or even 11th, really. So teams in and around us, like West Ham, who are, you know, were there. I think these are the big games, and especially at home, you want to be winning these ones. We've got a couple of good games coming up after this. Obviously, Alkmaar next, and then Luton away and Forest home. So it'd be good to just smash out a few wins.
Yeah, and that's what made me so disappointed about the Wolves game, to be honest. I felt like it was a really good opportunity to cement yourselves a little bit higher up, knowing that, you know, teams like Newcastle had some good fixtures. You know, West Ham have got us to play next. But after that, you know, I think they're going into a little bit more of a difficult fixture run where we could have picked up that extra 3 points. But look, you can't win them all. We didn't lose, right? if anything, we don't want to lose, and we couldn't buy a draw in a few years ago. In the last couple of seasons, we couldn't get a draw at all. So we have to be kind of delighted with that. I'd imagine that we can put in a performance at home, and just important that we win our home games this season as much as we can.
Well, we're 100% so far, boys. So let's give the scores.
I'll start off. This is a difficult game. West Ham are a very good side. This will be Emery's 85th game in the Premier League with no nil-all draw. He's third in the all-time rankings. He's catching up with Pochettino. Pochettino's 86 and Ferguson is 114. So for him to do it in the short time he's been in the league, 84 games, never having an Elias draw is incredible. I'm gonna go 1-1 with this,
which will put up in the fifth spot.
Yeah,
I'll go to all fellas.
You sound very excited about that too, all.
I'd be like Wolves away. To be honest with you, I said before Wolves away, I'd take a point. This is another one of those games, to be honest with you. West Ham, with the way they play and the form that they're in, that I actually wouldn't be too disappointed to take the draw here. I'd love to win, obviously, but I just think, yeah, we just don't have a good record against him. Just stop the rot and get a draw.
I don't think it's going to be a great watch, to be honest. Like, the last few games against West Ham, we seem to kind of, like when we played them at home last year, when we lost 1-0 at Villa Park, that was an awful game altogether.
I'm going to 2-0 win Villa.
Yeah!
Yes, Tetty. That's it.
I'm going 2-0 Villa, and I'm thinking that Emery's game plan will be to keep the possession of the ball, make them chase the ball, get them tired. Second half, bring on Bailey. Bailey sets up Dougie Louise, he's going to score from just on the edge of the box, top corner bins, and then Watkins will get a tap in somewhere.
Love it. I absolutely love it. I've gone 3-1, boys. We get off to a real flyer. Diaby nutmegs their keeper and slots it into the bottom left. Watkins does get a tap in, and McGinn actually gets one in. It curls from the middle to the top right-hand corner from distance. West Ham get a late goal. Who cares how they get it? We win 3-1. Goal difference goes up to +9, and we go into outright fifth.
Diaby could do with a goal, couldn't he? It's
been a
yeah.
He's playing well, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's been as good in the last few games as he started off the season.
But just to make you feel good, mate, he's going to be put through, and he's going to go to round the keeper. The keeper goes to go to ground and he nutmegs him for the goal.
What was the last goal he scored? Away at Burnley, I would say, probably.
I think maybe Burnley.
Yeah.
I think it was Burnley. But look, I think as well, like, John McGinn started to take shots a lot more. I think he's trying to find his way though. Some of them are a little bit wayward, but I think he's trying to find his way. I think he's still trying to score that championship type goal. I think, you know, like, he got the header though, didn't he? He got the header recently.
Yeah, looking at Emery's reaction to his two shots, I don't think we're going to see too many more chances. He nearly cut the keeper out, man, Jose Sarri. One of them, it just dipped at the last second.
Yeah.
But then 2 seconds later, he tried again, and I think...
Conn's had a couple of goals lately as well, hasn't he? Conn's has had a couple of the last couple of games. He's been in around the box and tried to hit one, but getting blocked. But I was just like, I've never really seen that in his game before. He's starting to try and get in there and grab a goal.
Well, just like England in the cricket, I think West Ham are going to be hit for three, boys. So, three losses for England in the World Cup and three goals for Villa tonight. And we're going to have a beautiful start to our working week.
Sounds good to me.
Looking forward to it because I've got to stay up. What time is it on 1:30 in the morning, isn't it?
11:30 for Spud and 2:30 for Rhino.
Oof.
I'll be watching it, boys. I've had no sleep whatsoever.
Yeah, I'll be watching it. And then I'll be going to work extremely tired because there's no way I'm missing it.
I think I'll be avoiding the score and watching it tomorrow after work, fellas.
So we won't interrupt the WhatsApp chat. Then we'll keep that quiet.
No, I think we read it for Rhino. I'll send him some personal messages from a private number.
I'm a bit worried after all the chat at the start of the pod now, Paul.
Yeah, you should be.
So, I was just going to say, I've been out fishing, so I jumped in the car to do the pod, but I haven't actually looked at the Fantasy League. So I'll tell you what we do is we'll give an update in the next pod after the West Ham game.
I've got an update for you, fellas. Rumours of my position as manager at the Sultans of Unai. What's been going on in the papers is untrue. I've had a chat with the board and I've had a chat with the players. They all need to lift. I'm in charge of this team and will be to the bitter end.
You're after getting the dreaded vote of confidence in the chairman, mate.
Yeah, I think you're gone now. You're gone if the board's back here.
Yeah,
guys, another awesome podcast. Thank you so much again for the question, guys. Please, on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, Aussie Villains. We do post the questions there. We do in our Facebook group and on Facebook as well. Rhino, where can we get you on X?
Rhino _ Watkins.
Spud?
Spud Talks Football on Twitter.
And Spud's podcast, give it a listen, boys. It's and girls, and anyone who identifies in between. And over to you, Tess, there as well.
I'm at Cuban _ Knight on X and the same on Facebook.
And I'm Paul _ Football, and my views do represent everyone else in this pod.
I'm going to talk to my lawyer after this.
Guys, let's hope for that. You know, at the minimum, let's get that draw and be still in fifth, you know, part way, a quarter of the way through the season. But let's hope for the three, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks for joining us for the Aussie Villains podcast. I hope we answered your questions well enough, and I hope that when we speak to you next time, we have beaten West Ham 3-1 up the Villa. Welcome to another episode of the Aussie Villains podcast. We've got a crew or semi-crew in tonight. Hopefully it's everyone. And we're going to look forward to our next European venture and for the weekend. This is the Aussie Villains podcast. This is Paul, one of the hosts. And guess what? Every time we go up the ladder, we're getting higher up the table, people. I was going to get up and find the broom, but then I got high. La, la, my room.